Now, time for your feedback, and we've had heaps in the past few days, so let's get weaving. Executive producer Amanda Armstrong joins me. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Richard.
What have people been responding to?
Well, just about every story we've done. We've had so much response. It's been fantastic. But let's kick off with one from today's show, the Health Hotline. This is from Susie. I love the idea of this service and was excited to hear it was available here in Queensland. We've had two occasions where we've actually tried to call the number, but both times I was given a message that the number was disconnected. I had to ring it two times on the first occasion as I couldn't believe what I was hearing. The government website was promoting the service and the phone number, but it wasn't available. Both incidents involved our children. It was late at night, and it was really distressing that I couldn't get through. I understand that there will be teething problems in setting up any new system and look forward to hearing good news stories. So that's from Susie.
Right. Well, we had a huge response to the Family Home Talkback of Friday. Let's hear what listeners are saying about that.
Yes, my name's Natalie. I'm calling from Perth. My boys are the fifth generation to live in this home. My grandfather bought it in the 1920s. The story goes he had an extra £20 in his pocket, so he bought the block next door. It was the first home in the street. The block next door was a tennis court up until recently. So my great-grandmother lived here, my grandparents, my father was born here. I was brought up here and now my boys and myself are here. And several years ago, my parents built a house on the tennis court. People still knock on the door and say, where's the tennis court? It's been almost 100 years my family's lived on this block of land. Thank you.
Oh, good morning. My name is Traudel and I've come here from Europe about half a century ago. And I would like to say that I think how you create your home, wherever that may be, is really important. My main home now is in Australia, in Perth, but I have a foot on three continents. I've also got a home in Malaysia, where I have very wonderful sisters-in-law, where I can go anytime and where I can feel at home. I go back to Germany, where I came from, where I have brothers. And here. But I've also lived in the bush here in the East Kimberley, where there was practically nothing, just a shed on the beach under a baobab tree. And I think as long as you're able to, whatever you particularly like, you surround yourself with it, or you put just a few things around you, and you will find that these little things make an enormous difference.
I live in my parents' house that was my grandparents' house, and my parents live overseas, and now my daughter has been born in this house, and she's, her room is my old room, and my parents are thinking of coming back and building a granny flat on the back of our house, and I just think that's a really special thing. Thank you. Bye.
Here's one from Christine. I have moved a lot in my life, first with my parents in Germany, then job-wise for myself, and then globetrotting with my husband who brought me to Australia. Now I'm in my 40s and have roughly lived in 28 homes. Last year when I was back in Germany visiting my terminally ill aunt, I had to say goodbye to her, but furthermore to the most constant place in my life, her family home. It was the first house my father, who died 23 years ago, had planned and built when he became an architect. My cousins won't keep the house, and in the best case it will be sold, or in the worst case scenario it will be demolished. With that, there will be no place in the world where I can bring my kids to let them experience where I grew up. Might be time to find our own family home. Thanks, Christine.
I've got an email here from Mary. She says, hi, my family home in Toowoomba in Queensland has played a formative role in who I am as a person. As Peter Watts stated, a home should be about soul. And our family home, my parents are still living there at the ages of 77 and 85, is very much about soul. It's old, wooden, and completely unorthodox, but is the heartbeat of our family. My mother's garden is an exquisite expression of the 50 years of love she's given it. The art room in the centre of the house still holds vestiges of artistic endeavours like painting, tie-dyeing, batik, origami, plus my mother's current creative pursuits. And in the lounge room, there are some of the remnants of my father's musical career, 50 years of attempting to master various instruments such as the piano accordion, the trumpet, the clarinet, the guitar and the piano. We, the three generations, still gather around the piano each Christmas. The kitchen has a grow pole marking the yearly growth spurts of the generations plus those of various friends and relatives. It is the first thing the grandchildren do when they visit, proudly mark a new height, comparing it to the same age height of their parents' mark on the pole. One day I will have to make room for that which I inherit from my parents' home, the family home. This will be my part in maintaining the family heartbeat.
Well, now on to love and responses to Dr. Gordon Livingston's series we started on Monday, Love Matters. Here's one from Sandy. Dr. Livingston's down-to-earth approach was the mantra that I was brought up with. I certainly wouldn't put myself in the fools category, does anyone? But I think the heady mix in youth and hormones can make fools of us all, and I wasn't exempt from dating the odd narcissist or fool. Happily, I always had a strong sense of the person I would ultimately share my life with and found someone who, more often than not, rates my happiness as important as his and vice versa. Well, I think that's the trick to it, isn't it?
That's it. I was struck by this the other day after talking to Gordon. I put my head round into Amanda's office and said, this is the problem, that when you're in the midst of it, even though you know that they're wrong, you can't help yourself sometimes, especially when you're young. I've got an email here from Jonathan, and he says, Gordon Livingston seems to think that he and the other ideal people to cherish should get together with each other and exclude those of us who exhibit those flawed qualities he thinks should be avoided. Hard to imagine there'll be anyone left for him to date. Whatever happened to relationships as a partnership in which one can learn about themselves and the other person and grow in the process? Livingston seems to think that can't happen, since he claims nobody changes their basic character. So in Gordon's world of psychological and emotional eugenics, I guess me and the rest of the flawed people will resign ourselves to having messed up relationships or to being single, which is probably the best, so we don't pass on our damaged genes to a future generation.
And we have a call on that too.
Hello, this is Lena from East Brunswick, the discussion with Gordon Livingston. I really disagree with the fact that people of the profiles discussed are hopeless cases that will and should be avoided with regards to relationships. I think if we can't change, you know, and that we're sort of cast in stone, so to speak, I think with support and understanding and insight, we can go on to make changes in our lives. I think it's much more complicated and complex than what Mr. Livingston purported. I've heard him speak before and have some respect and regard for his ideas, but I didn't agree with what he was saying this morning. Thank you.
Yesterday on the show, we talked to Alan Staines, who's director of the Hope for Life program, Salvation Army National Secretary, Suicide Prevention Australia. It's quite several titles there. I managed to roll them into one. He gave us a call after the show.
Alan Staines from Salvation Army Hope for Life program. I just been on the Life Matters show. I just thought I'd let you know I had a phone call immediately following that interview from a lady who had lost her husband to suicide, very emotional. And the result of that, she's coming to the conference to really participate in the Healing and Bereavement Service, which we're holding on the Saturday. So any promotion of the conference from the ABC would be greatly appreciated. It's going to make so much difference to those people who have lost loved ones to suicide. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Alan. And we also talked about complaining about ads yesterday. And here's one from Roz, who actually has complained about an ad. I complained last year about a TV ad for Jim Beam whiskey, which had an attractive young woman talking about her boyfriend. Among other things, she said, a restraining order is just a piece of paper. The ad finished showing the stalker, the bourbon. Apparently other people complained as well, and the ad was quickly withdrawn. I was happy with the response, but the ad should never have been shown in the first place. Thanks, Ross, and I think you've got one there too, Richard.
Yeah, I've got one from Anne showing how much times have changed. She says, I made my first complaint about advertising in 1977. It concerned a full-page ad in a weekly women's magazine well known to us all for a particular brand of diamond earrings. The ad was a close-up head profile of a glamorous woman with a large, hairy male hand resting upon her ear. The caption read, a clip over the ear never did a woman any harm. I wrote a furious letter to the editor of the magazine and sometime later received a rather patronising response from the magazine's art editor, who suggested I had no sense of humour. I do have a good sense of humour, actually, but not a misogynistic one. Anyway, if anything, it spurred me on, and I've complained about the representation of women in advertising innumerable times since, with varying degrees of success. We must be ever vigilant, but it is pleasing that these days there is a formal mechanism to enable a complaint where advertising is offensive.
Snoring.
Snoring.
We had a big response to snoring and sleep apnea, and I'm thinking perhaps we should do something more on this in the program in future. We talked quite a bit about men, but we had women ringing and phoning and emailing with their sleep apnea problems too.
Right. Have we got time to play the one call we did get?
Yes, let's do that.
I think we have.
Hi, I'm just ringing about sleep apnea and snoring.
an interesting development of an appointment with my children's orthodontist was that he wears a plate at night to bring his jaw forward to prevent his snoring. Thank you. Bye.
And we also got a huge, as Amanda mentioned, other response. We might try and squeeze some of those in tomorrow. Before we go, I want to mention a story coming up next week. It's all about growing up as a third culture kid. You might wonder what that is. I wasn't familiar with the term until recently. Barack Obama is a famous third cultural kid, born in Hawaii and then growing up in Indonesia and Chicago. And people like him are identified by having spent their childhood in a culture other than that of their parents. And there's various reasons for that. We'd love to hear from any of you listening who think you might be a third culture kid, how it's affected your life. Visit the website, abc.net.au/rn, and send us an email or phone the listener line on 0283334030. Tomorrow on Life Matters, the mother of all tree changers, Mark Kitto, was a hugely successful mini mogul in China. Then it all went horribly wrong. He retreated to a picturesque mountain village to start a whole new life, and he will be telling us all about that. Have a good day.